Arise, oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Beach presiding. All who have business before this court draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Peach. To my right is Judge Greenberg, and to my left is Judge Toth. We are here today in the matter of Stafford versus Wilkie, docket number 18-4520. The issue before the court is whether the board has jurisdiction to address in the first instance entitlement to a total disability rating based on individual unemployment on an extra scheduler basis under 38 CFR section 4.16 parentheses B. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearances for the record?
Stafford. With me at council table is Bradley Hennings, also a concern.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. Mark Hamill for the Secretary. With me is Deputy Chief Counsel James Cowden.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed? Okay. And each party will have 30 minutes to present their respective arguments. And counsel for the appellate, do you wish to set aside any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 10 minutes.
10 minutes. Thank you. Okay. You may proceed.
Judge Peach, Your Honors, and may it please the court. During the period on appeal, Mr. Stafford suffered from severe flare-ups of his knee condition, which were precipitated by as little as getting out of bed or getting out of the shower. His back tended to go out when he walked. He was on strong medication that made him drowsy. The board agreed that this was all considerable evidence that he was unable to work from November 2010 when he retired. And the uncontradicted vocational report says that he was unable to work by virtue of his orthopedic disabilities from that date. But the board.
So, you know, before we get into the merits, I want to ask just about jurisdiction generally, because as I read it, there's sort of a trio of Federal Circuit cases that say that a remand, that we have no jurisdiction to review when the board remands a case. First of all, was it a remand to hear, right, rather than a referral?
It's styled as a remand, Your Honor. It's functionally a referral insofar as the board said that it lacked the legal authority to address the matter in the first instance. A remand is the board's exercise of its jurisdiction for additional development or further proceedings. Here, the board said
did it request further development?
It did not. It did not. The only reason that the board did not decide this case in the first instance was because it found it lacked the authority to do so until the director passed on the issue.
And what was the basis for that? This bowling case?
Yes, it cited to bowling.
Can we overrule bowling?
I think that is one way to get there.
Is that the best way to get there? The better way?
I believe it's the cleanest way, Your Honor. What we would ask the court to do is to interpret the regulation as not requiring the board to refer to the director in the first instance. That may or may not require the court to overrule bowling.
And by doing so, we would expedite the ultimate determination for the veteran. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. This could go back.
By the way, I didn't mean to interrupt my colleague. If you wanted to
continue. Yeah, continue on with Judge Greenberg's questions.
Yes, Your Honor. This could go back to the board to grant or at least adjudicate in the first instance and avert any further delay here, which has been 19 months now since the board initially referred to the director.
Was there something wrong with the thought process that went into the holding and bowling, or is it just time to take another look at this interpretation of how the VA does business under this regulation?
It's a little bit of both, Your Honor. The Bolling Court did not conduct a robust analysis of 4.16b. It relied heavily on Floyd, which has its own flaws. As we pointed out in our opening brief, there are also distinctions between 4.16b and 3.321 that make the comparison it drew inapposite. Further, it didn't look into the language of 4.16b in any detail. It didn't look at that subsection of the regulation as a whole.
Was that regulation in existence at the time of the Bolling determination?
Yes, that regulation has been in substantially the same form since.
All right, let me, if I may, just change the subject matter.
Yes.
Your client's at 90% disability now?
Yes, I believe so.
So what's the most he can get, 100%?
Well, we're talking about the period from November 2010 to April 2010.
But is there real money involved here?
Yes, there is. I believe he had a combined, I believe, 50% during that time period. So from that to IU would be a change.
Right. Go ahead.
Going back to Judge
Counsel. If we were to revisit Bolling, do you think this panel could do it, or would it take an en banc to do that?
I think that the court could go one of two ways here. 3.321 has changed since Floyd was decided, and Bolling rested heavily on Floyd and its interpretation of 3.321. The similar referral requirement in the two regulations and the fact that no longer exists in 3.321, I believe, would give this court grounds to say that the law has changed significantly enough that Floyd no longer provides that support for Bolling. But we do also believe that the Bolling court did not correctly interpret the regulation in the first instance.
What was the change in 3.21?
The phrase upon field station submission was removed from the regulation as of 2018. And in the Federal Register, the secretary explained that the reason for that is that the secretary agreed with commenters that the board and the regional offices should be able to make the extra scheduler determination in the first instance. And as to that, there is a significant distinction between 4.16b and 3.321 in that 4.16b refers to rating boards, which is a term of art that does not include the board, Your Honors. That's another failure of the Bolling Court's interpretation of the regulation, was not looking at that term. Furthermore, the fact that that subsection of the regulation includes both the word shall and the word should, even if rating boards were properly interpreted to encompass the board, and again, we don't think that it is, it is not mandatory. The secretary clearly knew how to use a mandatory term, as he did so elsewhere in that same subsection. But going back to Judge Toth's questions about jurisdiction, which I think are an important threshold issue here, the board made a final conclusion on a question of law, and we do understand that it's styled as a remand, and the Federal Circuit's precedents have treated a remand as not an appealable decision, but the unique nature of 4.16b makes this case different and distinguishable from those cases. The board specifically found that it lacked the legal authority to decide a question of law, to decide Mr. Stafford's entitlement to this benefit.
And I'm following where you're going with this. It strikes me that we're either it's a remand, right, if we accept the sort of style of it and we have no jurisdiction, or if we deem it properly referral, don't we kind of run into the Adams case that currently is, I think we're about to hear en banc about our ability to review referrals of issues?
There is some similarity there, but we do
We do have a difference insofar as the Adams board decision was exclusively a remand. We do have a denial elsewhere in the board's decision here. So that is a distinction that I wanted to point out. Again, there is this unique nature of the regulation here that this is really the only opportunity for the court to pass on the interpretation and validity of this regulation is when the board makes the determination that it can't adjudicate entitlement to the benefit here. If we were to have waited, for example, for a merits determination, we would run into the sort of problem that happened under Howard or Ledford, where the determination was in a prior decision and the court lacks jurisdiction because it's not presented in the specific board decision on appeal. So this would be the time to review this legal conclusion of the board.
I mean, you could also bring a challenge, was it under 502, I mean, directly to the Federal Circuit. I mean, has anybody ever done that?
I believe that there's a time limit on that would preclude that here. So, and we believe that an as-applied challenge was okay, the...
Sure. I mean, the reg may be older, I don't, for all I know, than the Federal Circuit.
It's quite old. The TDIU regulation dates back, I believe, to the 1930s, at which time, by the way, Rating Board referred to the agency of original jurisdiction because rating boards were three-person boards at that time that decided at the lower level.
With doctors as members.
Correct, Your Honor. Often a vocational expert and a legal expert as well. But was never a term that meant to embrace the Board of Veterans Appeals as well. If the court disagrees that the regulation should be interpreted not to preclude the board from deciding in the first instance whether the veteran is entitled to TDIU under 4.16b, we would alternatively ask the court to find that constraining the board in that way is both contrary to its jurisdictional statute and arbitrary and capricious, because there simply is no reasoned basis for requiring this extra step in the process. In Mr. Stafford's case, the regional office has already...
Let me ask you, is there any reason we should defer to the secretary, who apparently has made this determination that this two-step process proceed?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
This is just an administrative decision the secretary made. It has nothing to do with the expertise of the secretary. Is that your position?
That is our position. And in terms of expertise, we would point to the decision of the Director of Compensation Service, which additionally exhibits no expertise as far as vocational matters are concerned. And additionally, I would point out that the director failed to comply with the board's instructions here, which were to consider specific medical evidence. She did not consider Mr. Stafford's facts at all, let alone what the board directed her attention to, and simply made some broad pronouncements about the state of the American workforce. And it's further illustration that this is an unnecessary step that adds nothing to the adjudicative process here.
But, I mean, even assuming, so let's assume we adopt everything, we go on bonk, we overrule bowling, that obviously doesn't necessarily change 4.16b. I imagine the ROs could send these cases to the Director of Compensation Services in the first instance, right? I mean, I'm just trying to get at how practically would this really help veterans? How would this make the process more efficient?
In a case like this, where the regional office has already passed on the merits of Mr. Stafford's entitlement to TDIU, he did get a rating decision addressing that issue. He got an SOC addressing that issue. He will now have essentially five adjudications, including two by the board,
sure,
where he could have had three with the board deciding it in the first.
But, I mean, I guess my question is, I don't know if we can, just by again, assuming we follow all the arguments, even by overruling Bowling, I don't know if we can force the secretary to sort of jettison this requirement, or you know, they can delegate decisions to, you know, to different branches. I don't know if we can require them to stop sending cases to the director of compensation services. So the point is, you know, it sounds like if they need more information, they need further development, they could remand it to the RO, who could then send it to the director. I don't know if this necessarily makes anything more efficient. You see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying, and Your Honor, I respectfully disagree as far as the director's decision being in any way a useful step in that further development. The board certainly is free to and needs to remand under Bernard, for example, if IU had been raised during the adjudication of an underlying increased rating claim, for example, and the board's addressing it for the first time, it would have to address whether the veteran would be prejudiced by that and whether remand for further development might be warranted. But the referral to the director does not speak to additional development, and there are already procedural protections in place. This simply adds one further unnecessary step. As the board's instructions to the director here illustrate, reading the board's decision as a whole, it did explicitly find considerable evidence that Mr. Stafford was unable to work from the time that he retired in November 2010 and was simply sending it to the director.
Where's the case right now procedurally? Where is it?
The director issued a decision in November, and as of first thing this morning, when a colleague of mine checked, there still has not been a supplemental statement of the case issued. So it's been 3 months since the director's decision, and it's sitting and awaiting an SSOC.
So is the board, in your estimation, bound by the director's decision?
No. As the court held in Wages, it's not bound. So the board is essentially free to ignore the director's decision, and has done so in many cases, as the decisions we submitted as supplemental authority illustrate. And I would point out in those decisions, the board made that initial favorable finding, upwards of 2, 3, 4 years elapsed, and the case came back, and the board says, okay, we've complied with that procedural step. Now we can essentially grant the benefit that we would have liked to grant in the first instance. And the only thing that has really happened as a result of that initial referral is delay in the veteran's receipt of the benefit. I would point out one or two final points. Adequate procedural protections already exist here, and the director's decision does not add another layer of protection to the veteran. And I would point out in that regard that the board is free to deny referral under 4.16B in the first instance without this so-called protection. As the court held in Peterson, it simply makes no sense to require this extra step when the board wants to and has made the requisite finding to and is statutorily empowered to make the finding and make the adjudication in the first instance. If there are no further questions, I will save the rest for rebuttal, Your Honors.
Thank you.
May it please the court. This claim is not ripe for review by this court. Appellant's claim will be returned to the board for a decision on extra scheduler TDIU. Once that decision is issued, appellant will have an opportunity to bring an appeal to this court, and the issue will be ripe for appeal. Section 7252 authorizes this court to review decisions of the board. According to the federal court's decision in Majit and Kirkpatrick,
sorry to slow your flow there, but what about the appellant's argument that the issue vis-a-vis the referral or remand or however it's stylized, that issue we can never get to unless in a posture like this? I mean, we could ultimately obviously get to the merits of the or the substance of the extra scheduler decision, but not the referral piece.
Your Honor, first of all, and I'll point to the record on page 13, the matters were remanded for referral. So in this case, the board did take jurisdiction and remanded it to the regional office for it to be referred to the Director of Compensation. So this
what about
is the case
what about the language they use that they lacked authority? Right? I mean, style versus sort of form. Because, I mean, the counsel from the opposite side argued that that's functionally a referral, not a remand.
We would disagree, Your Honor. There was an exercise of jurisdiction by the board, and they remanded it for referral to take some kind of action because that's what's required under the regulations. And the court's decision in Majid and Kirkpatrick and this court's decision in Breeden state that a decision of the board for the purpose of this court's jurisdiction is a decision with respect to the benefit sought by the veteran where the benefit is either granted or denied. In his reply brief, appellant attempts to distinguish Kirkpatrick. Appellant argues that Kirkpatrick is different because the Court of Appeals noted that the board did not address the issue of the board's jurisdiction. Although that is true, the Court of Appeals only noted this in responding to a separate argument that the board's remand order contained an implicit denial of relief. So this discussion was a separate issue that had no effect on the holding that a board decision must contain an order granting or denying relief to be appealable. Appellant's argument that Kirkpatrick does not control is incorrect. In any event, Kirkpatrick is merely a straightforward application of the rule from Majid that jurisdiction is conferred by the granting or denying of a benefit sought. However, Majid vacated the dismissal of an appeal while Kirkpatrick agreed that dismissal was appropriate. Both cases applied the same rule. In one case, there was a grant or denial of benefits which gave the court jurisdiction. That was Majid. And in the other case, there was no grant or denial of benefits resulting in no jurisdiction. That was Kirkpatrick. Appellant also attempts to distinguish Breeden. Appellant argues that Breeden is different because in that case, there was a possibility that the regional office of the board may still decide that it can adjudicate the claim, while in our case, the board cannot decide extra scheduler TDIU in the first instance. What appellant added to the argument there was in the first instance because that language is not in Breeden. Appellant overlooks the critical facts of Breeden. In Breeden, this court stated, because the board's remand here does not make a final determination with respect to benefits sought by the veteran, i.e. service connection for PTSD, the board's remand does not represent a final decision over which this court has jurisdiction. The same is true in appellant's case. The board did not make a final decision on extra scheduler TDIU, and therefore the board's remand does not represent a final decision over which this court has jurisdiction. There is no meaningful distinction between the facts of Breeden and appellant's case. So just like Kirkpatrick, Breeden, since there was no decision granting or denying the benefit sought, the issue of entitlement to extra scheduler TDIU.
So how would you address opposing counsel's arguments about the effect of the change in the regulation? What would you say to that?
I have a few things to say to that, Your Honor. First of all, I need to make a correction. When we're talking about the change to the regulation, opposing counsel said that in the comments in the Federal Register, and I'm going to direct the court to the exact point because I think it's important, 82 in the Federal Register at 57834. The change was made so the authority could be delegated to the regional office, not to the board. That's what the comment says. Opposing counsel said something different. I'd ask this court to take a close look and see what the comment says. So the change was actually to 3.321, not to 4.16. So 3.321 provides the general discussion of extra scheduler, and then 4.16 is extra scheduler in regard to TDIU. So in Bowling relied on the precedent and reasoning in Floyd. Floyd talked about 3.321.
And to the extent that the change in the regulation might undermine something, it might undermine Floyd, but there has still not yet been any delegation of authority for anybody other than the Director of Compensation to review extra scheduler TDIU claims in the first instance. So until there's a change, you can't say that the case has been undermined because, in effect, nothing has been changed. The only person who is designated, who has the authority to decide extra scheduler TDIU in the first instance, is a Director of Compensation. If at some point in the future that changes, and it may change to, if you look at the comment, the regional office may be given authority in the future, then at that point, it may be up for consideration whether Bowling should be overruled.
Do you know whether or not the board has ever, in the first instance, ruled on extra scheduler for TDIU without going to a referral?
Yes, Your Honor, because appellant has submitted supplemental authorities of 10 cases from the board where that has happened. Yes, Your Honor.
Why is that? Why is that if the practice has been that it goes to the director for their determination?
Those were handled in an incorrect way, Your Honor, and when it was brought to the attention of the secretary notified the board that that's contrary to the secretary's position, that the regulation and the controlling case law require the decision to be made in the first instance by the Director of Compensation. So unfortunately, that has happened. It has come to the attention of the secretary, and the secretary took steps to have the decisions made by the correct entity in the future.
Well, what about the erroneous decisions? Were they corrected by the secretary? Substantively, on the merits.
I don't know what you mean, Your Honor, by the...
You said it came to the attention of the secretary that the process was...
Your Honor, you're asking, did the secretary take some sort of action to correct, such as revision?
Yes.
To my knowledge, no, Your Honor. In those cases that have been brought to the attention, no action has been taken to correct those as of yet, Your Honor.
Well, how recent are these corrections? Or
the decisions, Your Honor?
Yeah, the decisions that have come to the attention of the secretary that have been wrongly decided.
Opposing counsel can tell you specifically, but I believe those were within the past maybe 2 to 6 years. But opposing counsel provided those, and I'm sure they can give you an exact answer. I haven't looked at them for that, Your Honor.
Got it.
So I addressed jurisdiction. And
let me ask one more question on jurisdiction. What about the issue, I'll use the word issue, that maybe this court has the authority to determine whether the question of the, maybe it's a question of law, that the board had the authority, did not have the authority, but had to refer it. Is that a legitimate question before the board, before the court here as to jurisdiction?
It is not, Your Honor, because the only thing that happened here was the board followed the regulation. There was no final decision giving this court jurisdiction, and the board simply followed the regulation.
It's about the ability of the board to not make the decision. I mean, I know it's kind of confusing, but it's not about the decision ultimately on the merits, but on the board's decision that they determined they did not have the authority to do it in the first instance.
No, Your Honor. Under Kirkpatrick, under Majeed, and under Breeden, there is no jurisdiction unless it's a final order. Even if this court should find the board's decision to remand appellant's extra scheduler TDIU claim gives this court jurisdiction, this court should still find the Bowling decision is valid. Like I said, the regulation has not made any effective change yet. It did not apply to 4.16. which Bowling applies to 4.16, and it was only Floyd that applied to 3.321. And again, the Director of Compensation is still the only entity that is authorized to adjudicate extra schedule claims in the first instance. That authority has not been delegated. As to whether Section 4.16B should be invalidated, simply because a regulatory provision restricts the scope of the board's jurisdiction, That does not render the provision invalid. There are seven other provisions that restrict the scope of the board's jurisdiction to adjudicate claims in the first instance. Section 4.16 helps to ensure claimants' rights by allowing claimants two bites at the apple. They get a decision from the Director of Compensation, and then they
What are just some of the examples of the seven, just to kind of help? I don't want to put you on the spot if that takes us beyond where we are.
I listed them all in my brief. Let me just go to my brief, Your Honor.
These are the seven you're looking up?
Yes, Your Honor.
Take your time.
Okay, Your Honor, I'm looking at page 13 of my brief. The board must secure a waiver from a claimant or otherwise determine that there would be no prejudice to a claimant by proceeding to adjudicate the question or issue. Actually, it's the wrong place. Okay, so that's from Bernard. And this is on page 14 of my brief. Bernard listed seven regulatory provisions that provide procedural rights that restrict the scope of the board's jurisdiction to adjudicate claims in the first instance.
So that's the top of page 14.
Page 14. And in a parenthetical, I cited to all the rights.
Okay. Thank you.
Appellant has received a decision on his extra-scheduler TDIU claim now from the Director of Compensation. His claim was denied by the Director of Compensation.
Okay. Is this the one that was decided in November, but
yes,
it's yet to be acted on or whatever?
Correct, Your Honor.
Well, where is it? Is it sitting on somebody's desk and in a big pile that they just haven't gotten to, or what? This is February. That was November. What's the holdup?
Your Honor, I did contact the secretary has inquired about this particular case and what the holdup was. We did not get a clear answer, but we were told that currently this claim is with the regional office for the supplemental statement of the case, and that it will be returned to the board for the board to decide the extra schedule of TDIU claim. And that decision could very well come out before this court reaches a decision in this case, which would render the whole issue moot. If the director of if the board renders a decision, appellant will receive what they wanted, not in the first instance, but in the second instance. So it could very well be that they're going to receive a decision from the board before this court gets around to issuing a decision.
Well, what if we were to issue our decision today?
Well, then that would be different, Your Honor.
But I'm still curious as to why it's taken this long. The case is here. We've got to make a decision. Wouldn't it have been helpful if we knew what the director had decided?
Well, we know what the director decided. We just don't know what the board is going to decide.
How long will that take to get back to the board? As I understand it, it's sitting on some desk in the director's office.
No, Your Honor.
Where is it?
At the regional office.
This is because you checked?
Yes, it's okay. At the regional office, Your Honor.
All right, so the regional office, and then what do they do?
A supplemental statement of the case has to be
prepared. How long does that take? A supplemental statement means they add a paragraph saying, we now have the decision of the director. Is there anything more to put in?
I'm sure it will be more than one page, Your Honor, but yes.
I said paragraph, or attached, here's the decision, or whatever. However you do it, I'm not quarreling with that. But how long does that take?
I would think
15 minutes? I mean, there's no substantive additional or procedural activity at the regional office except to supplement the record with this new event.
right?
Right, Your Honor. I agree with you. It should not take long, and we don't expect it to take long. And I'm not sure what the delay was up to this point, but we do now have a decision from the director. We're waiting for a supplemental statement of the case, and then hopefully within weeks or maybe months at the latest, I would think, we might have a decision from the board.
The Board of Veterans' Appeals.
The Board of Veterans' Appeals.
And that's the board you insist must make a determination before we have jurisdiction.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor.
I want to bring you full circle back to the back to your jurisdictional argument. So it's my understanding that a remand occurs when further development is needed and a referral when the board makes a determination that it lacks jurisdiction. So was further development, did further development take place here?
Your Honor, not as far as submission of new evidence or a medical exam, not in that sense. But the additional action that needed to be taken was it had to be sent to the regional office, the regional office had to take it and then refer it, because it doesn't get referred directly from.
So what was, substantively, did the board found it? You said it lacked authority. I mean, that sounds sort of jurisdictional to me.
Yes, Your Honor. And it,
but that's what, if we're.
It's the language from Bowling, Your Honor, yes.
Right, which is basically that when the board lacks jurisdiction, what properly occurs is a referral, not a remand. Because, right, the Kirkpatrick, all that language is proper. Like, if there's a remand, we have no jurisdiction, absolutely. Was this a remand or was it properly a referral?
Page 13 of the record, Your Honor, it was a remand to be referred. And that is a proper procedure when it needs to go to the Director of Compensation, because the board cannot directly refer it to the Director of Compensation.
Why not?
It's just part of the process, Your Honor. It has to go to the regional office first.
Doesn't that call into question, though, that distinction about, the remand, I forget the actual case of Young or whatever, that it's a remand when there's further development required.
That is one case, Your Honor. There's also a remand here when it's remanded to be referred to the Director of Compensation. Okay. It falls into the same category. The board is exercising jurisdiction, and then further action is needed, whether development or referral.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, go.
So what was the actual substantive activity that was brought to bear by the director here? The board sent it to the director to do something, which the director did in November.
Yes, sure.
And whatever it did, it went to the regional office. But what substantive, what merits determination that would affect the outcome vis-a-vis the veteran was made?
Well, part of the reason, Your Honor, why it goes to the Director of Compensation is because the Director of Compensation is thought to be in the best position to make consistent decisions on extra scheduler TDIU and maybe bring in some background or trends on employment. So if you look at the order, which is in the court record now, that was issued by the Director of Compensation, they talk about trends over the past 20 years, the use of computers. So the Director of Compensation is thought to be somewhat more knowledgeable and able to make more consistent decisions, and provides a benefit to have these decisions go to the Director of Compensation rather than what we had in a few of those cases where it was made by the board. So that was a benefit, Your Honor, by going to the person who the secretary has decided is in the best position to.
Is this an actual person? We talk about the board, but as we all know, the board acts through individual members.
Yes, Your Honor. Her name is on the order. Yes, Your Honor.
So what did the director do? Did she actually do it herself? She brought her expertise to bear on this case in making this supplemental determination in November? Or does she have a staff of people?
I assume there's a staff of people, Your Honor.
So how does the secretary ensure that what the director does is consistent? That's the purpose of going to a director, to make sure these TDIU determinations or extra scheduler determinations are consistent with current thinking, knowledge, whatever it is that you've just mentioned.
What do we do to ensure, Your
Honor? Yeah.
I don't think there's anything done to ensure other than put it in front of the person who the secretary has decided is best able to make that decision. So beyond checking that, if it's granted, it's granted. The secretary certainly has no qualms with that. If it's denied, then it goes to the board. The board.
And what can the board do with that? Reject it?
Yes, it's a de novo decision, Your Honor. So it's a second bite at the apple, no deference.
And you raise an interesting point. So this is the second bite at the apple is intended to benefit the veteran.
That's part of it, Your Honor, yes.
All right. So when it gets to the board level, and we have a hearing before the board, and part of the record is now this November, I'm speaking of this particular case, so this November determination, whatever it is, what does the board then do? Does it ask for testimony from the director? Why did you reach this decision? Does it get its own independent evaluation from an expert? Does it ask the parties to make arguments, submit additional factual determination as to why assuming it goes against the veteran, why the director was wrong?
I think towards the end of what you said, yes. They certainly have an opportunity to present argument and evidence that may show that the decision of the director of compensation was wrong. But as far as that decision, it's merely an adjudication. It's not evidence. And the board can disregard it and go with the statements or the testimony at the hearing. So it's just a step in the process.
So why shouldn't we decide the whole case here if either inferentially or actually the veteran says, we don't care about this so-called extra benefit for the veteran. We're content to have the court decide this on the merits now. We don't need to hear from this director.
Well, Your Honor, that's only one part of the reason for it. And the other part is about consistency and the maybe some sort of expertise that the director of compensation is going to bring to bear. So the secretary's interest expressed in the rules is that it must first go to the director of compensation, and then it would go to the board.
Let me ask you this. Is there somewhere, either here in this case or elsewhere, where the court could look to assure itself that this director is actually an expert and actually applies their expertise in ensuring the consistency you speak of?
Yes, Your Honor. Anytime you see an appeal in this court,
right,
you're going to see an order like you have in this case right now,
right,
from the director of compensation. And this court could put in an opinion, maybe criticism, that this decision doesn't reflect expertise or something to that effect. So this court does have an opportunity to see what the director of compensation has said.
Fine, but how do we know that the director has the requisite background, training, education, experience to do all the things you say the director is supposed to do? We don't have that. We don't know that.
I think you can take it from the decision, by reading the decision, Your Honor. I think you can see that it's a well-reasoned decision based on not just this veteran's circumstance, but other things going on in employment in this country.
How many of these are there that are dealt with by the director each year? To make a rough estimate, let's say we're now, do you do this on a calendar or a fiscal year basis? For example, the chairman of the Board of Veterans Appeals is required by statute to make an annual report. It's a statistical report. Used to have all the important decisions of this court listed. They've been eliminated in large part, I've noticed, in the last 2 years since the Staub determination was made, I might note. So can you estimate how many of these cases go to the director?
No, Your Honor, I'm not comfortable. I see a small...
Well, is it 10,000? Is it 1,000?
My best guess would be maybe in the hundreds. But
in the hundreds? That's very few compared to, what, 66,000 determinations by the board?
Again, Your Honor, I don't know, but I could find out for you. I just don't know off the top of my head.
All right.
And I'm a little afraid.
Well, I'm not holding you to it, and I know you're doing your best to be candid with the court. So if you don't know, you don't know. But I'm just trying to think about the scale of the work of this director.
sounds, relative to the work of the board, broadly speaking, very small. Small number of cases reach the director. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, Your Honor, yes.
Thank you.
This procedure at the director level is kind of interesting. What does the board or the director do with all of this information that he or she gathers from these referrals for extra scheduler? Are they applied globally, or do they impact reforms within the rating systems? I mean, what is the purpose for this referral, and what do they do with those trends that you spoke of?
Your Honor, since you mentioned reforms, I know there is a case that suggests that information might be used for trends, but I really have not obtained that much information about what information is used. I only know that those have been the reasons provided for why the Director of Compensation makes those decisions. Unfortunately, I don't know the answer to your question, Your Honor.
And then the decision from the director, does that become part of the record that the board reviews to make their own determination on the extra scheduler?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, it does. So again, the secretary's position is that there is no jurisdiction in this case. And this issue is likely to become moot when the decision is decided by.
All right, I'm sorry to pursue this, but let's assume for the moment that as you stated, the board is free to reject the director's reasoned determination that the veteran should or shouldn't. By the way, could the board reject and not accept a director's recommendation that extra schedule would be granted? That's a benefit to the veteran. Could the board reject that?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, that there would be any function in doing that. They don't have to accept it. It's more of a procedural step in the process that they need the decision first from the Director of Compensation, so that the next step in the process is it would go to the board. I don't think that there is
But it's a substantive determination.
It is, Your Honor.
Based on the expertise of the director, right?
Right, Your Honor.
And the board would presumably give it great weight or in its determination, or some weight, consideration.
Yes, Your Honor.
But it's just one element of the record before the board, makes its decision. Isn't that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
So what's wrong with the veteran saying, we don't have it, we don't need it, as far as we're concerned, we rather be at this court and let the court decide on the record that we do have in whether or not the veteran got what they're entitled to by reason of extra schedule or determination?
Your Honor, I think what you're suggesting happens commonly. When the Director of Compensation denies it, they go and argue before the board, veterans, and say things like, you should completely disregard this. It should have no bearing in your determinations.
Right.
I think that's fine. And the board could very well say, we agree with you, and we're going to grant it.
But what's wrong with the veteran saying, we don't have it, whatever this thing is in November, we don't have it now, and we're before this court? Forget about what the director said in November. Decide it. You, court, decide it.
I think, Your Honor, that the board is obligated to do a complete review of the record in the cases, and this is simply part of the record. So I don't think the board can say, I'm going to turn a blind eye to any part of the record, including the decision by the Director of Compensation. I don't think that would be proper for the board to do, because it's of record. And I think the consideration of claims should necessarily requires an examination of the whole record. And unless there are further questions, for the reasons I've stated, this court should dismiss the appeal or affirm the decision of the board to remand appellant's claim for determination by the Director of Compensation.
I do have one question. Do you think this panel can overrule Bowling?
No, Your Honor. You need to go en banc. Thank you.
Why?
Because...
As either the Supreme Court or the Federal Circuit said that.
I don't know, Your Honor, but I know there is a decision from this court that says that.
Yeah, but that's this court.
Okay. My understanding of the...
How about your reasoning? What under the statutory scheme enacted by Congress since the first Judiciary Act of 1789 suggests that we need to go en banc? I mean, there was no court till 1988.
I don't know.
I mean, is there any decision of the Supreme Court of the United States or the Federal Circuit that says, in order to reject a previous panel decision, which is what bowling was, panel decision of this court, we need to have an en banc decision of this court?
Not that I know of, Your Honor. My understanding is simply that that's the policy of this court and that's the case law of this court.
Very candid.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Both sides agree here that the director's decision has no bearing on what the board ultimately does, which simply reinforces the point that referral to the director is an unnecessary and meaningless step, as the secretary himself argued in Wages.
But who then? So who compiles the facts?
The regional office, Your Honor. As has been done in this case, there was a rating decision and a statement of the case advising Mr. Stafford of the grounds for the denial of TDIU. He had full opportunity to prosecute his claim up to the board. There is no need for this further step of the board sending it back to the director to issue a decision that the board is then free to completely disregard. And as far as what the director does is being characterized as of record, I just want to reiterate that Wages said it is not record evidence. It's akin to a decision of the agency of original jurisdiction, which we already had here.
Well, what is it? Merely precatory? Is it just an advisory opinion?
The regulatory language?
No, the director. This thing that some director decided in November, but you don't have yet.
Right. It's essentially another decision.
Do you know what it is? Do you actually know what it says?
I do know what it says. It's akin to a decision of the regional office.
What does it say?
The director says, and I'll just preface this by saying that she does not discuss any of Mr. Stafford's specific facts, including those that the board directed her.
Then what use is it?
It is of no use. And as far as she's claimed to be bringing to bear any expertise, I would respectfully disagree there. She has no, I'm looking at her resume right now. She has no vocational expertise. She has a...
Is this in the record before us?
It is not. I would be happy to submit it, Your Honor.
So no use. I mean, most people would prefer two shots at something than one, right? I mean, you get two chances to win. I mean, is that of some use or is that just never happens?
It's not... I would respectfully disagree with the characterization of it as another bite at the apple because the board could have decided this here, and it's going to go back to the board after what will likely be 2 years of delay for the board to make a de novo decision without any...
Right, but bowling would apply, excuse me, I mean, if we were to overrule bowling and kind of adopt what you're saying, that would apply to a lot more than this case, presumably... You could get a case in front of a board member who doesn't really think extra schedule is warranted, looks down, realizes now they've got to refer it, and the director disagrees, thinks it is warranted, and grants it, right? I mean, that would be good. I'm just saying, how do we know it's functionally mean? I could definitely, I'm finding it's inefficient, but I don't know if it's...
Respectfully, Your Honor, if the board decides that TDIU is not warranted, it's not going to make the referral. So it's not a second bite at the apple in that instance because...
Well, no, I mean, they may privately look at the facts and say, yeah, no way, but look at the reg and in bowling and say, you know, I have to refer this. So I will let somebody else make that decision, and then somebody else, the director, may, you know, again, theoretically, grant it. Board members say, wow, okay, I wouldn't have granted that, but the director obviously sees it differently. That would be a benefit to a veteran, right?
Well, under Peterson, if the board doesn't find that TDIU is warranted, it can simply deny referral under B. Mm-hmm. So the director, it wouldn't go to the director in that instance.
Okay, so there's no, the situation I invented was a pure invention. It would never happen.
I don't believe it would, Your Honor. I don't see a board member, if the board member finds the TDIU is not warranted, he or she is not going to refer.
Maybe they say, okay, reasonably raised. Person's not working.
Right, and then we're in the case of, under Bernard, if additional development is warranted, then the board can remand for additional development. But the director's decision is not equivalent to further development, as Mr. Stafford's case shows. We have the director talking about the evolution of the American workforce, as the government pointed out, pointing out trends towards computer-based work. But again, we have the fact that Mr. Stafford's facts were not considered here. He cannot sit for more than 30 minutes at a time.
I mean, sorry to interrupt. I would ask the presiding judge if there's any objection to having counsel, or if there's an objection from the secretary here at the background training and experience that you seem to have over this director, to make that part of the record.
What is it you want part of her resume?
I would be happy to submit
that. And this other report, do we have that?
Her decision and the underlying memo from the Appeals Management Office are in the record as part of
this. This is the November decision?
Those are in the record, Your Honor, yes. We submitted those under Solzi.
Maybe I have the...
Let's go ahead and...
I'd like to see the... And I'd like to give the government a chance to supplement that, if there is a supplement to the resume of the director.
Okay.
Before you leave today, just give it to the clerk.
I will give it to the clerk.
And they'll make copies.
Certainly.
Is that correct?
That's fine.
Judge?
That's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll go ahead and do that.
Okay.
Keep going, if you've got anything more to say.
Yes, I would point out that the secretary has conceded that 4.16b restricts the scope of the board's jurisdiction, and it's critically distinct from the procedural protections outlined in Bernard. Bernard was a two-part decision that first said the board has jurisdiction to address issues not previously addressed by the RO. It can exercise that jurisdiction if it determines that there would be prejudice to the veteran to decide on the merits, to remand for a hearing, to remand for further development, to get an RO decision based on that developed record before it returns to the board. The director's decision is not that development. It's simply a constraint on the board's statutory jurisdiction. And I want to go back to a point I believe Judge Toth made about whether we need to jettison the referral requirement for the regional offices as well. And I don't believe that is necessary here. We're simply asking the court to interpret the regulation to exclude the board from the referral requirement. As I pointed out before, the plain meaning of the term rating boards does not include the board. I think that the plain language and surrounding provisions of the regulation make that clear, but if the court, as Judge Greenberg wondered, would need to get into the deference question, I don't think deference is appropriate here. The secretary has numerous times actually expressed concern about requiring the board to refer. And the litigation position here is a departure from that. Floyd itself was decided over the secretary's objection. There have been numerous statements of concern in wages, for one. As we pointed out in our brief, the possible reasons for referral to the director making sense were provided by the court, not by the secretary. The secretary, in fact, argued that it was meaningless, time-consuming, and unnecessary. So deference to the contrary position here is not appropriate. And furthermore, as the board decisions we pointed out show, the board often does go ahead and grant in the first instance. And there is no prejudice to the veteran in those cases.
With respect to that, does the referral to the director, when it's made, affect anything like an earlier effective date or any other kind of a benefit or a plus? So if it's referred back, or if it, and does that affect the effective date, or is that not even part of the equation?
That's not part of the equation, because the board will have received the claim, and the director is simply taking what the board disclaims jurisdiction over to decide and making a decision on it. So there is no effective date benefit flowing to the veteran.
And so then your concern is that it just takes time?
Yes, Your Honor. As to the concern over mootness, firstly, we are not there yet. We are in the same position, the director's decision notwithstanding, that we were when this appeal was filed. The veteran is still waiting for a final decision on the merits of his entitlement under 4.16B. If we were to get there, I think we might be in the position of talking about a situation of capable of repetition yet evading review, but we are simply not there yet. We are where we were when this appeal was filed.
Well, so what difference is it going to make to go through the process of sending the November decision officially to the regional office? They supplement the record, and then it comes back to the board. The board makes its decision based upon what it considers the importance of this supplement to the record.
None.
It won't make any difference, will it? You're content, even if there was a Marbury against Madison level of opinion from this director saying your client should get it. You're content to have us decide it now. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. There's no value added here. If the director had granted, it wouldn't return to the board because it would be a favorable finding to the veteran. And as far as the issuance of the SSOC and the development of the record, I would respectfully not characterize it as development of the record because the director's decision isn't evidence. And the issuance of the SSOC is simply a ministerial act requiring even further delay here. The RO can't overrule what the director has said.
But I don't get it. Is your position that the secretary is not acting in good faith here? I mean, why are we going through this extra procedural step if it's not going to affect the outcome, and B, you don't care what it says?
I see my time is running.
I'll go ahead and add two more minutes.
I would not argue that this is an exercise of bad faith. Bowling held and Floyd held that referral is required even by the board. So our issue here is over the interpretation of the regulation to require referral by the board.
So in order to move this entire process in this case, and broadly speaking in other cases, along, we'd have to overrule Bowling.
You would have
a mandatory effect of bowling.
You would have to interpret the regulation as not requiring the board to.
Got it. Thank you.
Go ahead. You have a minute and 23 seconds if you'd wish to use it.
I would just briefly conclude, Your Honors, that we would ask the court to interpret the regulation as not requiring the board to refer under 4.16b, that may or may not require overruling bowling as far as the underpinnings of Floyd have changed and therefore bowling. Alternatively, if the court does not interpret the regulation that way, we would ask it to hold that the regulation is invalid as applied to the board, either because it restricts the board's statutory jurisdiction or it's arbitrary and capricious. And then we would ask the court to remand for the board to apply the correct rule and to adjudicate Mr. Stafford's entitlement without further delay. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted for consideration, and the court will come down now to greet counsel.